JC Corcoran Podcast.
I live in California, like Dino said, and I go home to visit my folks in St. Louis, mostly for the holidays. My Uncle Earl, boy, he loves baseball, though. He's a baseball fan. He listens to the baseball game every night on the radio. He spends a whole game complaining that the announcer is not telling him the score frequently enough. That's all he wants to hear is a score. So he just shouts at the radio, "What's the score, fat ass? What's the score, moron? What's the score, fat moron ass?" Like, his idea of the perfect broadcast would be this. The score is 3-2. 3-2 is the score. The score is 3-2. One team has 3. The other team has 2. The team of 3 is beating the team of 2 by a margin of 1. The score is 3-2. Hey, folks, if you've just joined us, the score is 3-2. Well, we're going to go down to the field now for a special report. Bob, what's going on down there? Larry, down here, the score is 3-2. But let's take a closer look at that score, the number 3. That's an odd number. It's also a prime number, only divisible by itself. It's 1 less than 4, 1 more than 2. That means if the team with 2 were to get one more run, the score would then be 3-3. Whoa, let's not get ahead of ourselves, Bob. Right now, the score is 3-2.
Now, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest is jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over again.
Tuesday, August 9th, 2022, 95 days remaining in our American democratic system of government as we have known it. How you doing, kids? You are at jcontheline.com. Well, anything happening? Anything new that we can talk about? Now, there was a lull in the story overnight for obvious reasons. Everybody's asleep. Well, most people are asleep. But that's one of the differences between doing a live morning radio show and doing a podcast, because by the time you listen to this, it might be 2 o'clock this afternoon. It could be tonight that you actually get around to listening to the podcast. So I think our diagnostics seem to indicate that the majority of people are listening sometime in the morning. But regardless of all of that, it's sort of the big difference, because you sort of talk about what's happening right now when you're on the radio. And when you're on the podcast, you have to understand that for somebody listening to this a couple of hours from now, this story is going to be changing almost hourly in terms of new information and details and things like that. Just to set this up, though, I'm going to play something for you here on the red. A judge has to be convinced by the prosecutors, or in this case, the FBI, the Justice Department, everybody else involved in this whole thing. A judge has to be convinced that a crime has been committed, and that evidence related to that crime is inside that house, and therefore it justifies the warrant to be able to access the house and get in there and bust it open, the safe and everything like that. So that's pretty dramatic. I mean, we've crossed a line in American history now. I don't think I need to tell you that, but sometimes you just have to say the words out loud. But we're officially in a new area now, the area that a lot of us probably thought we were going into or going to arrive at some point anyhow. It just took a long, long time. And if you're going to possibly arrest, indict, whatever the case may be, a former president, you better know what you're doing. You better already know. Then when it's your time to take the mound, you already better know that you're going to throw a no-hitter. Now, I'm not a big fan of MSNBC. I never really have, by the way. Do you know that before it started being called MSNBC, it was called America's Talking? And I used to be on that station all the time doing movie reviews. Nobody was watching. And then one day they stopped calling me. And so I picked up the phone after a couple of weeks. And they're like, haven't heard from you in a while. What's going on? No, she's no longer with the company. Oh, well, let me talk to her assistant. No, she's no longer with the company either. And then a couple of weeks later, they announced that the whole thing, that everybody basically was let go and that the news station was being called MSNBC. But I digress. Maybe that's one of the reasons I've not been a fan of MSNBC, because I don't think it's like they say. I don't think I would like to belong to a club that would allow me as a member. But there's a lot of people on vacation this week, and as they say, on assignment. Early August is seen as a very dead time in media and entertainment because there's tons of people on vacation right now, and a lot more probably also wrapping up vacation, and everybody's getting ready to get their kids back in school. So it's not a very attractive time. A movie that gets sort of a tepid response from the test audiences when they start showing a completed motion picture to test audiences, it's like, okay, it doesn't stink, but it's not really setting the world on fire. Dump it in August. And so pretty much, there are exceptions, but pretty much anything that opens up in early August is probably a dog. But you can see when this story broke early yesterday evening, you could tell they started dragging people in from their vacations. Tom Brokaw, when he was working, when he was the linchpin at NBC, said that there was something like a dozen times where he was either on vacation or literally packing bags to get on a plane, where NBC called him in and said, you're going to have to postpone your vacation. We got a really big story, and we need you in the anchor chair in 20 minutes. And then he would proceed to be on the air for like 18 hours straight covering some major story. So this stuff happened. So they started calling people in. And I'm not a fan of MSNBC, as I said. And for whatever reason, this Stephanie Ruhle just doesn't do it for me. I've seen her on a variety of shows. I don't know. I just don't connect with her. But last night, they found the right person to talk to, and this should scare the living daylights out of you. I know that people have not always had the right reaction when I start the podcast every day by counting down the number of days until the midterm elections. We're 95 days away today, and people think that I'm over-sensationalizing or something like that. I'm not. I don't feel I am. And if you're on the fence on this issue, your opinion may be about to change. So this is from MSNBC, Stephanie Ruhle, last night, and she'll introduce the guest, and you'll figure this out right away. But we start with a clip last night from Fox News. Here it is.
This is going to absolutely enrage the country, especially the Republican base, a base that is clearly behind the ex-president.
The news of the FBI searching Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago home sent MAGA world into a complete frenzy. As soon as the news broke, there were enraged posts threatening to take up arms, with supporters wanting to make their enemies, quote, cry out in pain. So let's discuss with the man who knows, who has to monitor all of this for us. And for that, we are grateful. NBC News senior reporter Ben Collins. He covers disinformation and extremism on the internet. And describe what you are seeing online.
This is the worst I've seen it since January 5th, probably, of 2021. These are people emboldened who are ready for the Civil War. That's the way they're talking right now. They're talking about flipping over their flags to show that the nation is in distress. They're talking about buying more ammo and buying more guns. And they're talking about how the time for organizing is past and that they have to start going into action. That post that you just saw, the top post on the Donald, which is where a lot of these people planned for January 6th. They posted maps of the tunnels underneath the Capitol. They posted their stashes of weapons at hotels in Virginia. That post right there on the Donald says lock and load. That's the top post that you see in reference to the news tonight, that Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago has, in fact, been subject to an FBI raid.
The words lock and load. Well, Ben, it was before January 6th. It was the night before. You and your reporting partner, Brandy, said, this is going to be a violent attack tomorrow. You rang the bell. You sounded the alarm. Are you right now feeling like we are going to see a repeat event of something similar in terms of the violence?
I would say the only good news here is that there is no organizing principle here. They have tried to get people to go to Mar-a-Lago tonight. That is too quick for a lot of these people on this forum and a lot of these people in these telegrams. But they are planning for something in the future, and they are just very, very upset. The difference is they had a tip of the spear with Donald Trump back in the day. They had a guy who would spout directions and say to be at a specific place to channel all that anger. That's how it ended up on January 6th, is Donald Trump told them to be at a specific place on January 6th, and they said that was the last day that they could take action. There is no tip of the spear right now. It probably still is Donald Trump, but you have to find him through Truth Social or something, or you know, you have to find him through a press release now, not through Twitter giving step-by-step instructions. The only solace here is that there is no big brand date for this stuff just yet. But the anger and the vitriol and the idea that this is a last straw, that the Civil War is basically upon us, that is the thing that's permeating in these pro-Trump forums tonight.
But has any of that movement weakened, whether it's all of those January 6th or many of those January 6th rioters getting arrested, getting convicted, Donald Trump not pardoning any of them, the January 6th hearing, more and more Trump officials, his former attorney general saying it was all a big lie. None of that is getting through to this MAGAverse?
No, it's not getting through. There was a moment after January 6th where these forums are a little bit more coy with how they talked about stuff. They realized that they were being watched by the feds, and they started talking a little bit more abstractly about either the apocalypse or whatever they thought was coming, or you know, or whatever civil war they thought was coming on. That moment has come and gone. They are back to overtly calling for assassinations and deaths of their political enemies. And it's gotten more specific tonight. Frankly, I just want to make that very clear. These people have had enough. They are completely. They've made the next step. They've made the leap. They always say in their space, cross the Rubicon. They said that Donald Trump. It's a reference to Julius Caesar to you know basically just take over the country by force. Tonight they've been talking about crossing the Rubicon a lot. It's a different vibe tonight.
Then what do you think law enforcement is looking out for next? What are you looking out for next?
It's the same groups and the same people. I thought some of these groups would be quieter. I thought the Groypers and the Proud Boys, I thought they'd be quieter. I would say the Oath Keepers probably are a little bit quieter. Proud Boys are louder than ever. And those groups, those militias, believe they're fighting for a bigger cause. They view January 6th as a recruitment tool. I will say the GOP, the Republican Party, had a chance to stop this, step in and cut this stuff out in the months after January 6th. That did not happen. As you saw at CPAC this weekend with the man crying in the jail cell as you put on headphones to listen to January 6th rioters complaining about their conditions in prison, they view themselves as martyrs to a cause. They view themselves as part of a war that is ongoing and they are about to start fighting physically in person. This is a very serious thing that we have to start facing head on.
So there you go. What do you follow that up with? Like I said, I have not been exaggerating all along here when I count down the number of days left in our American democratic system of government. As we have known it, there have been people in the past, and there's still people, you know, the religious stations do this too, like the Pat Robertsons of the world. They scare you to death. Alex Jones does this too. You know, the world's going to end, so buy thousands and thousands of dollars of these survival packages that I sell. Somebody's buying it. The guy's hauling in $100 million a year and more in some cases. So somebody believes him and somebody is buying this stuff. I should have known something bad was going to happen overnight because it is the anniversary back in 1969 of the Tate-LaBianca murders that were instructed by Charles Manson. Many of you have heard this story because we had him on many times. Remember the medical reporter for Channel 4, a guy by the name of Al Wyman. Great guy, by the way, great guy. Well, he happened to be working as a general assignment reporter for the ABC television affiliate in Los Angeles back in 1969. And to make a very, very, very long story short, what happened was is that the prosecution had all these Manson people in custody, and they were building the case against him, but they did not have what they thought was, quote-unquote, you know, the smoking gun. And they considered the smoking gun in this particular case to be what was referred to as the creepy crawlies, the clothes that the Manson family people who committed the murders were wearing when they committed the murders. They would have been completely covered in blood. But the Manson murderers had the presence of mind to have a change of clothes. So when they were picked up, there was no trace of the clothing that they were wearing. Everybody was like, well, what happened to the creepy crawlies? What happened to the clothes? And time went on. It was like 6 months later, and Al Wyman had an idea. And this is brilliant, by the way. It's just absolutely brilliant. He said to the, he's out in the news truck, and they're sitting in front of the Tate mansion where the murders took place. And Al's thinking to himself, you know what? There's only two ways out of here. Because he was familiar with the geographic layout of Los Angeles. And he's thinking, well, when you come out of this sort of, we call it a subdivision, but a neighborhood, when you come out of here, there's really only two ways out. One would be a left turn that would take you into some of the more affluent places in Los Angeles and Beverly Hills and stuff. And the other way, if you turn right, would take you into the San Fernando Valley. And Al's thinking, well, they're not going to be going into the rich areas of town. They're going to probably be going back to their ranch in the San Fernando Valley. So he gets in the back of the news truck. They're sitting in front of the Tate mansion. And he says, all right, start driving. And when you get to that fork in the road down there, go right towards the San Fernando Valley. All right, ready, go. And he gets into the back seat and he starts taking his clothes off. Now, luckily he told his driver of the news van what he was doing. So he starts undressing. And at the point that he gets completely undressed, he says, all right, stop. Al then has the presence of mind to put his clothes back on before he gets out of the truck. And he gets out, and sure enough, they're standing on the edge of a canyon. And he figures, I just nose around down here. Goes down the hill of the canyon, there's the fucking clothes. He finds them. And back then, they didn't have all this wireless equipment, no satellite technology, nothing like that at all. And so he had to actually run a bunch of extension cords from a house across the street over to the edge of the canyon so that he could go live on television at like 6 o'clock that evening and break the story. Absolutely remarkable. Just remarkable. What a story. Old Charlie Manson, 1969 on this date. And then Michael Brown was killed on this date in 2014 up in Ferguson. There's some pretty ominous things happening on this date in history. And now add to it the former American president having his house raided, his safe busted into, and unfortunately, perhaps also setting off, which could be a, I don't know, a firestorm of reaction by Trump supporters. We're living in scary times, folks. We're living in scary times. I'd have to dig around more extensively in my archives to tell you what movie it was and what year it was. It's probably not that important to know those details. But there's all kinds of different screenings that they do in Los Angeles, depending on the kind of movie that's being released. If it's like a Die Hard movie or something like that, what they would do is they would fill a theater with like 800 people who all worked for the movie studio, and then they would put we movie critics right in the middle of the theater, so we were surrounded by all these people who were paid to ooh and ah and laugh in the right places and everything like that, and they would try to influence our decision about the movie, our assessment of the movie that way. So you have screenings like that. We have that, and they have all points in the middle, and then way over on the other side, sometimes they'd take us into a room of like 40 seats and a screening room, and there would be nobody in there but us. But there was one screening in particular, like I said, I can't remember the year or the movie, but it was a smaller theater, but I noticed, I was looking around, there were a lot of famous people in the theater that night. People, as far as I could tell, had no connection to the film we were about to see. And again, you know, the studio has the center of the theater roped off for us and signs all over the place that say, you know, press and only. I go in there, I sit down right in the middle of the movie theater, I sit down, and about 5 minutes later, a vision appears in front of me. I remember thinking to myself, there is one of the most beautiful women I think I have ever seen. And as she got a little closer, it dawned on me, well, one of the reasons she looks is she's wearing a ton of makeup. And it was a professional makeup job. This is not her sitting at her vanity a half an hour before she shows up at the movie theater. This is a professional job. That woman was Olivia Newton-John. And she walked over and sat down directly in front of me. And I mean the seat in front of me. Could have reached out and done a Joe Biden with her hair, you know. And then sitting next to her at the time was her husband, Matt Lattanzi, as Italian looking as anybody who ever had a job as an extra in The Sopranos. And they came in and they sat down right in front of me and they were whispering a little bit, and she was turning around, looking behind her. Our eyes met a couple of times and she just gave me a pleasant smile. Didn't bother her, didn't talk to her, anything like that. I've never interviewed her, but she seemed like a very, very pleasant gal. And it was in the 1990s sometime, so she was still looking absolutely extraordinary. And really played it right, you know, coming out of Australia with that first song, which was actually sort of considered country. It was If You Love Me, Let Me Know. If you love me, let me know. And like I said, it was one of those country crossover things. It was a country song that turned into a pop song. And then she covers George Harrison with If Not For You. It was very well produced. And as all that was happening, people started looking up her picture. This was all pre-internet. So you had to watch a TV show that she was on, or they had, you know, back then fan magazines. And people were like, holy Jesus, look at this girl. Not only does she sing, look how beautiful she is. And truthfully, Olivia Newton-John was these kids that audition on American Idol have better vocal range than Olivia Newton-John, but Olivia Newton-John had the whole package, and she played it the right way and had good managers and a good, strong record company that was behind her and had a pretty good life up till the time about 20 years ago when she was diagnosed with breast cancer, and she fought it and she fought it and she fought it, and yesterday she lost that battle, only 73 years old. The very first Busch Stadium Billy Joel Elton John concert took place on this date in 1994. There's a pretty good chance you were there because everybody was there. You couldn't pry your way into Busch Stadium that night. That's how full that place was. I was broadcasting live from the press box. I was doing radio. I was doing TV, doing everything. Really a very, very exciting night. And here's a little clip. As far as I know, the only known recording from the stage that night. They allowed me to plug my tape recorder into the soundboard for the first three songs and get this recording. I'll pick it up midstream.
I hope you don't mind. I hope you don't mind that I put down in words how wonderful life is while you're in the world.
Quite the night, 1994, on this date. All right, late night tonight, you got Kate McKinnon on with Jimmy Fallon. Stephen Colbert's got Ben Stiller. Joe Walsh is in residence this entire week. And Trevor Noah's got Idris Elba. As of last night, Anne Heche, reportedly in a coma and fighting for her life after crashing her car into a house last Friday. They have her listed as in extremely critical condition. Tom Cruise writing a script for a musical where he's going to sing and dance this coming weekend. There's going to be a Top Gun fan appreciation weekend at participating theaters around the country. Aaron Rodgers was on the Barstool Sports Show, Pardon My Take, a couple of days ago, and the host tried to joke with him about how many grandmothers he's killed with his anti-vaccination stance. He did not find that funny, but he didn't get upset about it either, and he continued to joke with the guys even after they changed the subject. They're reportedly rebooting the 1988 classic Working Girl with Melanie Griffith and Harrison Ford, but did you know NBC tried it as a TV show back in 1990? 12 episodes, it starred an unknown actress by the name of Sandra Bullock. Sandra's only notable credit before that was the 1989 TV movie Bionic Showdown, The $6 Billion Man and the Bionic Woman. All right, birthdays today. Anna Kendrick, she's doing well and shot a movie in St. Louis with George Clooney. 37 today, Gillian Anderson from The X-Files. 54, she from Grand Rapids, Michigan. Had a chance to interview her a couple of years back. Deion Sanders, 55, Hoda Kotb from The Today Show. 58, Melanie Griffith. We were just talking about her. 65 today. And Sam Elliott, 78. Bad day for Hitler, 86 years ago today in 1936. Jesse Owens shoved it in his face by winning a bunch of gold medals at the Olympics. The Beatles movie Help, released on this date in 1965. Tricky Dick Nixon became the first president to resign from office on this date in 74. Rick James pled innocent to charges that he imprisoned, tortured, and sexually assaulted a woman in his California home, including burning her with his crack pipe. He was convicted anyway and served 2 years of a 5-year prison sentence. This was all on this date in 1991. Jerry Garcia checked out. Heart attack 27 years ago today. And there was a story out of the Minneapolis area 22 years ago. There was an elderly couple that had gone to Minneapolis for a little getaway weekend, and it was one of those years where it was abnormally hot in the upper Midwest, including places like Minneapolis, where the temperature was almost 100 degrees. People live in Minnesota because they don't want it to be 100 degrees, but it was almost like, you know, the asphalt on the highways in Minnesota was just like on fire. And this elderly couple is driving along, and all of a sudden, it turns out they had some of those Bridgestone Firestone tires. The company had to recall 6.5 million of them because there were lots of accidents, hundreds, in fact, that led to 46 deaths. And this elderly couple is driving along, and whop, 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 and the tires just start exploding as they're driving along. And two guys in their 30s are driving along the highway, and they see this car on the side of the road, and they see these two people in their 70s standing there trying to figure out, Jesus, what do we do next? And the guys went ahead, got off on the first exit, came back all the way around, drove all the way around, and came back on the highway, pulled up behind him, and changed the tire for them. I know this story because the two guys were from St. Louis, and I won't embarrass them by saying their names because I used to say their names. They didn't do this. They didn't execute on this act of kindness because they wanted some sort of recognition. So I won't say their names, but it was two guys from St. Louis, and the elderly couple was my mother and father. True story. And when they were standing there just exchanging small talk, my dad asked the guy, where are you guys from? He said, St. Louis. He goes, oh, my son lives in St. Louis. Oh, really? What does he do? Oh, he's on the radio. What's his name? J.C. Corcoran. They're like, get out of here. So it was a great story. Resonates with me even today, and a reminder that there are still some really good people in the world. As you watch the news today and tonight, and as all of these stories that we've been bombarded with here in recent days, weeks, and even years, as this whole thing really, really starts to play out now, just try to keep that in the back of your head somewhere. There's still good people in the world. Sometimes you have to look a little bit, but there's still good people in the world. And with that, the J.C. Corcoran Podcast for Tuesday, August 9th, 2022 is in the can. 95 days remaining in our American democratic system of government as we have known it. We are here every weekday morning just after 7 o'clock at jcontheline.com. Please tell your friends that we're here doing this every day. You can email me, jc at jcontheline.com. Follow me on Facebook, The Showgram with J.C. Corcoran. Have a great day. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.